The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. By the way, well, hang on, Wayne, Alan, Gary, and more. Your calls and comments coming up in just a moment. I just want to address this different story here just because it's something that we have talked about the last couple of days, and we have been a little bit confused because all the talk on the China, you know, U.S. trade deal has been on the U.S. side. It's been, well, will the U.S. Lift existing tariffs, or is it just they've agreed to delay future tariffs? And part of our frustration is every article that we've read from every financial publication didn't say, well, what about the other side? What's China willing to do or willing not to do? What's the holdup? You're saying the holdup is the tariffs and the existing tariffs, but if Trump could get the intellectual property, if he could get exactly what he wants when it comes to agricultural, purchases, if he could get what he wanted in enforcement, well, he'd probably drop them. So what aren't the Chinese doing? And we couldn't find that out. And following the Wall Street Journal late last night came out with an article, U.S.-China trade talks hits a snag over the farm purchases and more. It's like still everything is up for debate. Nothing's been settled here.
Well, I mean, it's according to the story, the president of the administration wants China to agree to $50 billion in purchases and agricultural purchases. And China doesn't want to agree to a number.
Right. They don't want a hard cap.
Well, and they because in their mind, in part, according to the article, they don't want to look like they're on the losing side of this.
Right.
So if they're agreeing to something, you know, they fully expect, and by the way, they should, if they're negotiating with the president, with this particular president, they should know that if, when the deal is done, he's going to promote it as a deal that's better for the U.S.
Right.
That's the way it's going to play out. This is, and we going back to, oh gosh, months ago when they walked away, part of it was, they didn't want, China didn't want all of the details of the trade agreement in the media. Well, sorry, it's the U.S. It's going to be in the media. And they didn't want it promoted as something that benefits the U.S. more than China. So communist pride, I guess you can chalk it up to, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that there's going to, you know, the president's going to need some kind of something to tout when he's out on the campaign trail for China. It's going to have to be a couple of things. Intellectual property rights. But, you know, when you say intellectual property rights at a rally, that's kind of boring. They're buying more from our farmers. Yeah. Okay, now you've got something that is emotional. And I think also there's the play for the Midwest and the president knowing in those farm states he's going to have to deliver something solid with a number on it and not just say, well, they're going to buy more.
Well, especially since he's been talking about it. It's unprecedented what we've done. I will tell you one thing, though. He has made proclamations that the Chinese have not agreed to, but the Chinese have made proclamations that the U.S. hasn't agreed to. You notice nobody really attacks back when either side does it.
Right.
I see there has to be the part of the trade agreement, it seems to be, between the president and China has to be, look, we'll come to a trade agreement. But we both need to be able to promote exactly what we wish to promote about what the trade deal does without the other side objecting to it.
Right, exactly.
But the other thing is, too, the other problem is China's resisting the U.S. request for tech transfer, not to be able to be forced to transfer high tech. to do in order to do business there, and also they haven't agreed to the enforcement mechanism. Right. And we said, look, the enforcement mechanism is everything. If it doesn't hold water, it doesn't do any good. So you and I both wondered, does this mean there is not really going to be a deal, except a deal not to do anything right now until after the 2020 election? Because right now, as you know, Trump, 6 months ago, well, and who knows what may happen tomorrow, or excuse me, later on today, you never know. But 6 months ago, Trump would be railing at China if this story came out. Now, did he tweet about this last night? Mm. Or is it like, no, let's just, you know, he understands he needs a good economy going into the 2020 election. And a couple of stories, I think it was Wall Street Journal, saying that China's getting hurt more than they're letting known on this. And that's what the president has on them, that their economy is actually hurting. And he's got the point. He actually has the he can throw out the political rhetoric that it's hurting them more than it's hurting us. And it's legit when he says that, that it is hurting them more than it is hurting us, based on the fact that, again, we're not having 3% growth, which I believe we if we had a deal with China 2 years ago and the tariffs were never put into effect, I believe we could have reached 3% growth. In fact, I know we would have last year.
Yeah, I think so.
We would have reached 3%. We could have been at 3.5% economic growth. So it has hurt the United States. And so how you define what hurts, well, the president can go out right now and he can sell the fact that economic growth is still good. Employment is great.
Yeah.
And the stock market's through the roof.
Yeah.
So, and politically, they know. China knows, because we're, you know, hey, we're the open society. They're not. And so they know exactly the fact of what the president is promoting. So there is pressure on them, especially since they're getting burned by this. Because remember, the United States is a domestic and export market. China isn't. China's not the kind of domestic and export combined as
right,
we are.
Right.
They design their economy for exports.
Right.
And so, yeah, they're getting hit. So, but when you look at the story overall, I don't know where they're going to go. And I wonder if there's just going to be a truce to say, OK, we'll just keep working on this. And, you know, all right, Mr. President, you can go crazy on us at your rallies. And we can also say things that criticize you and how we're going to have a stronger one, and we can play to our bases, but let's not attack each other, and let's not stop negotiating so we can move forward and have the markets look at it at that, okay, we're not going to react, everything's going okay.
Yeah.
They're sitting down and talking. As long as it goes no further than it is now, we're all both all right with it. Might they be at that point?
Well, you know, everything right now, I think, in terms of the tariffs, is already priced into the market.
Yes.
But the question is, with his voter base in those farm states, can the president let that happen?
Yeah, good point.
You know, because I suspect he was looking for that $50 billion number for just that reason. Not just in the farm states, but, I mean, it resonates in the non-farm states. Hey, they're buying a lot more of, you know, our agricultural goods than they were before. They cited in the Wall Street Journal, they cited pork, soy, and other products. But, I mean, you're going to get out there and you're going to, that's what you're going to campaign on. Hey, we got a better deal. We came out a winner. And China doesn't want to promote that. They don't want to commit to a number. So if that's this could be the walk away, and China knows it. China doesn't have to stay at the table. They don't.
I don't know what because they talk about the mini deal or the phase one.
Right.
I have no idea what it would be.
No, I don't know.
This confuses me even more as to even if they know what the phase one would be.
Well, you know, it's China's establishing trade routes with other nations. They did that, in the wake of the tariffs from the U.S. agricultural goods. Now, no one's going to be as good at it as we are. but they are nonetheless working other deals. And how much pressure is on China right now to get a deal done? I think they want a deal done, but they don't want to make a commitment. I don't think they want to make the commitment on the number. I don't think they want a commitment on an enforcement mechanism.
Well, then if you can't commit to an enforcement mechanism, there can't be a deal.
And this is the hard line that the president takes on, you know, with things like this and negotiation. I wouldn't put it past him to come out and say, you know what, maybe we need to put those tariffs in place. That's a play on China. That's not a play on the economy. But it's not a winner. But if you, and this is the problem, I think, in going down this road with China, we agree he needs to stand his ground on especially enforcement of intellectual property rights. That's going to have to be a hard line. Because if we don't get that done, we'll never get it done.
Well, do you think that what you have right now is that, you know, because it was Lighthizer who did not want the president to put on additional tariffs. Now, he's Mr. Tariff like Navarro is, and he said, no, we can't. I think they understand how it will hurt the economy, and they're worried about the election next year. Is it the fact that right now that you have both Lighthizer and you, and I'm not sure Navarro may want to, I don't know what he's thinking today. He might want to put the tariffs on, but it's 2-1 because you've got Kudlow and Lighthizer saying no. Mm-hmm. Status quo is better than threatening more tariffs today or putting more tariffs, especially if it will hurt more of our, you know, if it will send the message to the farm belt that we're never going to get a deal done here. That there is no optimism, there is no hope.
But if you don't write it into the language, I mean, in terms of the $50 billion on ag stuff, if you don't write that into the language of the actual deal, then what good is it? You can't do this on a pinky promise.
But you can't write a trade deal without enforcement mechanisms.
Right.
And if you're going to set goals or minimums, as happens in trade deals, you know, to begin with, normally it's done if you sell over this amount, then this would happen. But the fact is, the Chinese have indicated that they were willing to do that in the past to set a number. And now they're sort of backing off, are they not?
I guess it depends on what they're getting in exchange.
Right.
What are they getting in exchange for this? If they feel they're not getting, you know, a fair shake on whatever that, you know, get would be for them, then no, they're gonna look at that and say, wait a minute, we're not gonna commit to $50 billion, and you guys come out the winner.
This story came out at 8 o'clock last, a little after 8 o'clock last night. Did the president tweet yet on this? because it's been relatively calm. He's been relatively calm. More normally, just some of the things in the last week that happened, he would have exploded 6 months ago. And there may be a point where, as you just said, he may explode and just say, nope, we're putting him on now.
No, we're putting, and look, he's going to create that policy. So at that point, he may get resistance from within, but he may look at that and say, no, I need to teach them a lesson that they're not going to do this.
Depends on the last person he talks to.
Said that to you walking out the door yesterday.
Did,
he's
yes.
very influenced by the last person he's talking to, but he's also influenced by the public play, very influenced by the public play between any two sides, well, any side that is that he's dealing with at the moment. So he will react in a heartbeat. Does he do it here is the question.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Analyzing the oil in your vehicle is like sending your blood to the lab for tests. After you have submitted your lube scan kit, technicians will check for elemental metals, including the presence of metals and other elements such as aluminum, chromium, iron, lead, copper, calcium, and more. Knowing the levels of these materials can help you identify wear patterns in a specific part of your engine. High amounts of wear metal usually indicate an abnormal wear or corrosion problem. Technicians will also check for insoluble matter like carbon, fuel, and dirt. The insolubles test measures how fast the oil is oxidizing and receiving contaminants and how effectively the system's oil filtration is functioning. Analysis will measure the oil's viscosity, its alkalinity or acid level, and if the proper level of detergents and anti-wear additives are present. If your oil falls out of the range it's supposed to be in, the oil could have been overheated or contaminated. The lube scan report will detail the results of these tests and provide an overall condition of the sample, ranging from normal to severe. If you've used lube scan before, the report will include any changes from earlier analysis. For more information, visit Cenex.com.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Wayne in Virginia about the impeachment hearings. Wayne, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Great show as usual, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Y'all always help explain the mind of a Democrat so we can all understand it.
Neither do I. Neither do we. Neither do we. We just don't. I can't look. It's not even about being a Democrat or Republican or conservative or a liberal, but it's based on the fact that is there critical thinking and can you follow a pattern of consistent thought where you can connect the dots and can you relate wrongdoing to a specific definition of a crime, and they don't seem to be able to do that.
I reckon, is that why it seems like there are always those two gentlemen that spoke yesterday, their opening monologue, it all seems so well scripted, you know, down to the synchronizing their watches and their calendars on something that happened weeks ago, months ago, that they can remember down to that detail, and I can't remember what I done yesterday.
Well, yeah, I mean, they look, the all the monologues from the members of Congress are scripted, I'm sure, mm-hmm. or at least outlined so they can look at it. But I'm sure every single witness has an outline in front of them and have gone over it over and over and over and over again about what points they wish to make.
Right. Yeah. Look, the last thing you want to do is get something wrong or change something. You do not want to do that under oath. You do not want to be a witness in an impeachment, especially. But if you're sitting before a committee on Capitol Hill, you got to make sure you get it right. I mean, that's expected. Yes, it may seem nefarious in nature, but it isn't always. You're not going to get them to say something. I mean, that's going to hurt themselves or, you know, whatever, that I guess people might be expecting. You know, there aren't going to be any real surprises in a situation like that.
And I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to insult or demean anybody, you know, on the left when I say that about critical thinking and connecting the dots, but they don't.
Right.
And like I said, forget about Democrat or Republican, conservative, or liberal. If you're talking about how the court system runs in this country, and I know this isn't a court of law, but it is a political court.
Yes.
That is following the same American principles as due process, transparency, and evidence of some wrongdoing. And so when you hear one of the leaders of the Democrats say, well, hearsay evidence can be much more credible than direct evidence, you know
mm-hmm.
that their case is extremely weak. You know that when you have two of the lead witnesses that come in on that day, and remember, a political court is to convince people that you've got this guy and everything is hearsay.
Yeah.
It's you have to ask yourself, do they have any idea what they're doing, or are they just going day to day ever since Trump said, well, I will release the transcript. Oops.
Mm-hmm.
of sexist white men. Nightly, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye. If you would like to get in, we head back to you on the impeachment hearings yesterday. Alan in Lubbock, Texas. Alan, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you very much. Eric and Gary, you know, on the face of it, you would say the average rank and file Democrat would have to show amazingly poor judgment to follow their leadership into another disastrous series of public hearings. It would be like being a survivor of the Titanic and allowing your leadership to book you on the Hindenburg and just continue to go through one disaster after the other for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
But actually, I think there probably is, and y'all have done a great job, everybody, you know, trying to use logic to explain what the grand strategy is. I wonder sometimes if maybe a lot of the liberal Democrats are too bored or too ignorant to be able to use logic, and instead they rely on name-calling and emotion. And if you notice, that's what gets the attention on the nightly news. It's some emotional thing I've never seen in the last 4 or 5 years on our local television. More people crying. I mean, that's the newscast. Somebody crying about something. And it's just odd how it's hard to use logic when you've got somebody calling you names, swearing at you, or accusing you of being all sorts of things, from a racist to a bigamist to whatever, and then on top of it, crying.
Well, it may seem odd as a defense, but I used it a couple of months ago, and I said the one problem that Democrats have, especially when you have things like impeachment hearings or even the Mueller investigation, is one thing that Americans know about. They may be ignorant on a ton of things. The majority may have no idea what the three branches of government are. But the one thing that Americans, liberal and conservative, have watched over the last 30 years, kicked off by the TV series Law and Order, Matlock. You think Perry Mason. So I'll go back the last 60 years when you think of all of the shows, and then all the shows that have come on since Law and Order and all the Law and Order spinoffs. Americans understand how a courtroom works.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that they do understand. Why? We've watched it so many times. So when you have the Democratic representative yesterday coming out and saying, hearsay evidence is many times much more credible and accurate than direct evidence. Everybody laughed when they saw that.
Yeah.
Even Democrats, they went, shut up. If this is the first day that you're bringing in the prosecution witnesses, and that's what one of the prosecutors is saying, shut up.
It really is beyond laughable. It's, again, I feel embarrassed for the Democrats. I really do. Because they're really trying to make it now. Gary, I mean, think about that. They're trying to make hearsay sound noble and just.
Yes.
That a case built on hearsay is noble and just.
And we understand this is not a legal trial, but a political trial. But the same very, very well-known, very, very well-known in the spirit of America ideas is due process, transparency, even in a political trial. That is expected. The charge should be well defined, as it has been in modern impeachment history, which, again, it doesn't take much to go back and look at it. Americans expect that. We understand that Democrats want him out no matter what. And if you ask Democrats, many of them will say, we don't care whether it's unfair. Just get him out of office. Any way to get him out of office. But they will understand that the process is unfair.
Yes.
And you're not targeting those Democrats. You're targeting independents. And when you look at how this whole thing is done, there's nobody out there who has a critical thinking mind and can set partisanship aside and say, what's the evidence that exists out there? What's the charge? What's the evidence? What has gone on over the last 2.5, 3 years with this president? And whether you like him or not doesn't matter. As I've said before, when people ask us, do you like the president? It's like, well, no. It doesn't matter whether I like him or not. Doesn't matter. That's not even, I don't know if I like him or not. I don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
I might not like the way that he acts at times, but whether I like him or not has no bearing on how I judge him. I judge him by whether he's doing my bidding or not. If he's not doing my bidding, I have no problem criticizing him whatsoever. None. If you listen to the show, you know that we don't. Now, we know that there are a significant number of people that don't want any criticism of this president, but I actually understand why. They believe that he is pounded on by the media all the time, that he needs 100% of your support 100% of the time, even if you know he's wrong. We understand that. That exists on both sides, always has existed. But there's got to be people out there, when you get to a point like this, that are willing to say, and I believe many are, is this process fair? Is this court, this political court, or this criminal court, are they actually following what the protocol, what the rules are, and what we expect in any type of trial, be it political or criminal, in the United States? And there's no way you can say with a straight face, yes, it is.
And it's, again, it's a standard that the American people expect. They expect things. Yeah. If you're going to bring something as big as impeachment, then you're going to have to bring big evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be based on the hatred for a guy, the dislike for a guy, or you still whining about the fact that she didn't win. It has to be something real. Because if this works for the Democrats, we're doomed. If this has the effect of ultimately him not winning next year, he's not going to be removed by the Senate. But if he doesn't win next year and we can point back to impeachment, then we're doomed. This is the trapping in the elevator of Jeff Flake.
Well, it's also destroying the seriousness or any type of legitimacy for the impeachment process.
Yes.
You've just destroyed that half of it.
You've just shredded the whole.
Right.
In fact, you've shredded every process, and you can put that aside now, because now you can take this to Senate confirmation hearings. Now you can take this, which is exactly what they tried to do with Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh, yeah.
Well, if they get this done on impeachment, that's a big deal. This is the version of AOC keeping Amazon from moving into her district. This is that kind of win. And they don't care. And from then on, it won't matter. Forget the process. Forget whatever the system is. Forget about burden of proof.
Forget the law then.
Right.
If you can win.
Exactly.
If you can win in the political court this way.
Oh, yeah.
The next step is that evidence doesn't matter against our political enemies in a real court.
Right. And that's the way it will be. We'll set new standards. There won't be any standards.
Well, just think the jury nullification will be coming from the left.
Yeah, right.
And not as it has in many cases in the past, come from the right.
Yeah, right.
It'll be coming from the left.
Mm-hmm.
Jury nullification, don't pay attention to the laws. The laws are bigoted. The laws are wrong. You need to set the standard in jury rooms yourself.
Right.
You need
exactly.
to make the law.
Right, right. Create the activist in the juror.
Exactly.
Yes.
Why not? Everything else is.
Well, sure. No, there wouldn't be if if you look at this and something this huge wins, well, then there can't be any end to the effort. There can't be any boundaries or limits. They'd be willing to go anywhere and everywhere. Now, I suspect that they are anyway. But I mean, well, as a party, it will be in unison. They'll all be moving as activists at every turn.
Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal pointed out what we pointed out, I think yesterday or the day before, about that if you apply things equally to both sides, then Obama should have been impeached for the "I will have flexibility after the election."
Yes.
Because if the new term of bribery, as Adam Schiff has come up with, the fact that even in this case, doesn't matter if there was a quid pro quo, doesn't matter if the other side even knew it was happening, if that was your intent, that's bribery in itself.
Right.
Even though if nothing was ever transferred or anything like that, that's still bribery, because what you got in it in return was a value, and what you hope to get in return in value was the presidency.
Right.
Well, then we should have been calling for the impeachment of Obama.
Yep.
After he did that, because he was talking to another foreign leader, an enemy that by the Democrats' own standard, an enemy of the United States who cannot be trusted in any way. And he was telling him, look, give me some time here.
Right.
I'm setting foreign policy on, and I need to keep this quiet from the American people, because I want to be able to do what is against America's best interest after the election, when I'm elected, and have more flexibility. And he's telling it to the leader of the Russians. If it's bribery for Trump, and you don't even have that much with Trump.
Right.
You don't even have that with Trump.
Right.
You've got the evidence with Obama. If you are being intellectually honest and say the new term of bribery from Adam Schiff applies to both equally, then we need to go back and impeach Obama, which, by the way, you can go back and impeach a president even after they're out of office.
Right. Yes. And again, because you're looking at that. Why? After the election, which means he was doing something in his own interest.
Yes. In his own. He did it so he could get reelected.
So he could get reelected. Right. He put off whatever that promise to Medvedev was.
Yes.
Until after the election, that was all about him and getting an advantage for himself.
Did one Republican talk about impeaching the president?
No.
No. Why? It's not impeachable.
Right. They're going to make deals. That's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
And by the way, I think it was Devin Nunes that brought that up today. Pretty sure it was Devin Nunes brought that up in the line of questioning. But it was interesting that they brought it to the, but they didn't, I don't feel they used it in the way they should have.
Can I tell you this?
To make the point basically that we made, they were limited on time, but still didn't make the solid point.
One more point. It was such a dud yesterday. I think that, hey, the IG report can come out any day now and it can be publicized like crazy.
Right. Well, could be today. Maybe.
Maybe. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, with all the impeachment hearings and everything this week, we forgot to mention one critically important story.
I can't believe we dropped the ball on this, actually.
Eric, I brought this up in the pre-show meeting. It's 4 hours later, and he knows exactly where I'm going.
Yeah.
Yes, Mark Sanford ended his primary challenge against Trump.
I'll never forget where I was when I learned that Mark Sanford ended his bid for the primary challenge for
you ready
president
for
as or nominee as a Republican.
I am suspending my race for the presidency because impeachment has made my goal of making the debt deficits and spending issue a part of this presidential debate impossible right now, he said in a statement.
Yeah, right. That's the reason.
He's blaming impeachment.
Yeah. Well, if it weren't for impeachment, I would. I mean, I could have done it.
Wow.
Don't think I couldn't have done it.
Julian Castro, when he gets out, will say, "Well, because of impeachment, nobody was there wasn't enough media and press paying attention to me, so it's Trump's fault that I have to exit from the Democrat side."
That's right.
Uh-huh. Why not? Right.
Well, no. If they, you know, we were talking about earlier, if they don't have the headcount in the House, ultimately, I think they'll say, "Well, the president blocked us. We had key witnesses in the administration, Mulvaney, and we should have had more from the White House. They didn't cooperate, so it's Trump's fault that we're not going to vote on impeachment. Bolton wouldn't show up. Mulvaney wouldn't show up. It's Trump's fault."
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He is Eric Harley. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Well, in the news today...
Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? President, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Lindsey's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about, as far as I know.
And President,
there was no reason for it.
President Zelensky never made an announcement. This is what I can't believe. And you're their star witness. You're their first witness.
Jim Jordan and Representative Jim Jordan and Bill Taylor, the first witness for the Democrats yesterday. Here's Mark Meadows afterwards on his analysis.
The ultimate judge will be the American people, and I think most of them will see what I'm seeing in that room. It's reporters and people in the audience who are yawning because this is all about a policy difference between the President of the United States and a few people at the State Department.
And by the way, that's one thing you're getting out of this over the last couple of weeks with the testimony, that it is a policy difference. I think the highlight for me, and everybody had their own different highlights, this was when Representative Mike Quigley ended his session with the Democrat representative, by the way, his question answering period with George Kent this way.
Primer on hearsay, I think the American public needs to be reminded that countless people have been convicted on hearsay because the courts have routinely allowed and created needed exceptions to hearsay. Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct, as we have learned in painful instances, and it's certainly valid in this instance.
Well, gentlemen...
That had to be, there were some bad moments for the Democrats. That, to me, was the worst. I'm going to try to sell to the American public hearsay evidence. You know, I'm reading on social media that one of the excuses from Democrats is, look, just like a criminal trial, we don't start with the, with our best. We're going to end with our best.
Okay.
Here's the problem with that. We all know that this isn't the same. There are marked differences between, as we know, how this this type of political court operates versus a criminal court. The other big difference is, in a criminal court, you have a jury. The jury has to stay there the whole time. The American public does not.
Right. The jury has to simply, put up with it.
Yes.
Whatever the prosecution or the defense might do, whatever shenanigans, but I do wonder, because you're not going to make people believe, oh, we're going to end with our best. No, you're not. No, you're bringing, you want to bring to the table the biggest, when you bring a witness in a situation like this, the biggest impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that that momentum carries the rest of this public hearing process. Well, I honestly don't know where they go from here, because tomorrow, Yovanovitch, word is, she cried behind behind closed doors testimony. She shed some tears. The thought came out, or she had talked about during that testimony, the fact that she was warned to watch her back around President Trump, whatever that means. They're probably going to get into that more, I'm sure, tomorrow. And then when you look at it, it was also a difference in policy. I mean, I'm sure that's also going to carry on mm-hmm. tomorrow. She didn't agree with the foreign policy of President Trump. Well, you don't make foreign policy.
You know,
the president does.
I will say this, that, and I don't know, we haven't even talked about this, so I have a feeling you may agree with me on this. It's so obvious to us, to a Mark Meadows who said it, to the liberal panel that was on Meet the Press who recognized that. David Ignatius from the New York Times said it, that if they can't, that the Democrats need to act as if they're soldiers fighting against, in essence, an enemy of the United States who was the president.
Yeah.
He didn't even say, look, they've got an impeachable event, which is bribery. He's saying they've got to make that their only way to go is to make this about foreign policy.
Yeah.
And the president has such
right.
radical foreign policy.
Yes.
That even though you can't, you're not supposed to impeach him for this. You've got to make the strong case that he needs to be impeached for this, because he's too radical to be president of this country, because his foreign policy is going to destroy us. Well, we're still here.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And we haven't been involved in any conflicts, have we?
Right.
And so it comes, and as he said, otherwise it comes across simply as policy differences. The left even knows that.
They do. And they really can't sustain, you know, without introducing some new angle on it. I mean, think about this. This is going to go into next week. They're out for the Thanksgiving break after Thursday. So, I'm guessing they're going to have a few days. I haven't looked at the schedule yet. To see what's up for next week. But tomorrow, they go through Yovanovitch. I'm guessing that's going to be maybe 3 hours total. I mean, what are you going to do?
You're going to talk about disagreements of policy again. And that was my point, that when you're somebody who pays attention to this in any manner or way,
mm-hmm.
that, and that's why I've said, whether it's the New York Times columnist or whether it's Mark Meadows saying it or whether it's us saying it, it all comes across the same thing. This is about a disagreement. They're trying to sell that the president is such a radical on foreign policy that he must be removed from office. It's really not the bribery or abuse of power or whatever. It's even being recognized in the liberal media. That's what you have to do. And that's why the NPR correspondent on Meet the Press on Sunday said, you know, they're going to need drama. They're going to need emotion. She cried. If she cries again, that will show just how bad Donald Trump is. I mean, it got to the point of being bizarre, but we look at it, and the more that they parade these bureaucrats out to promote the fact that Donald Trump is a radical on foreign policy, and they're the ones that we should be obeying or we should be following, the more the average American who understands how this works looks at it and said, you're nuts. The president gets to run it. And I may disagree with this, as I have. I've disagreed with the president. So have you. Tons of times, even on what we believe is his approach. We've agreed with him mm-hmm. a lot on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And we've disagreed with him of how he's responded on foreign policy. And we've warned him that if he takes a particular road and tries to do it in a different way and it doesn't work, it will come back to bite him big time. But look, it's like the whole thing with Bolton the other day when it's John Bolton doing his private speech, and it came out that Bolton said, well, Trump must have had some business interests somewhere with Turkey on this, because everybody in the room disagreed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he still wanted to go his own way. And I had to ask, and by the way, I'm a big supporter of John Bolton.
Mm-hmm.
But on that point, when he said that, I went, do you not know who this president is?
I mean, you and I were talking about that, our post-show meeting yesterday.
On the way out the door.
The door.
In the parking lot.
Yeah, talking about how this president is often influenced by the last person he talked to. So I the way I saw it was that he was on the phone with Erdogan, and he talked about that conversation with Erdogan. And that was the move he was going to make after talking with Erdogan.
Right.
And it was influenced by that conversation.
Right.
At the White House yesterday, talking to Erdogan here in the U.S. visiting. I don't know, you know, again, $100 billion trade deal with Turkey. Again, there's some questions. I'm scratching my head on that one. Why we're treating Erdogan. I know Turkey is an ally, but there are a lot of people that don't trust Erdogan. I'm one of them. But nonetheless, I have a lot of questions about that. Again, he's the president. He gets to set foreign policy. In the case in Syria, he's commander in chief. I can disagree with it. He gets to set foreign policy. With the Democrats, with the left, it's no, he's dangerous because of this. Now, they didn't say that with Iran, the Iran deal. They didn't say that with trading Bo Bergdahl for the top Taliban leaders. They didn't say any of that.
Didn't say it with the flexibility.
Yeah, with Medvedev.
Comment. Right.
Yeah. The
and,
promise.
Right.
And the influence of the election.
Right. So I do believe, and I don't know whether it's accurate what Bolton said or not, but look. You and I have talked about this, and I couldn't work for any president, by the way, but I do sense, and I think the American public, and especially this is where Joe or Jane Sixpack, which I include myself as part of, I think my mentality is closer to that than probably an elitist out of Washington, D.C. Part of the problem is Trump goes in. And he's new, and he wants to run things his way.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got these people that have been in established positions for decades as bureaucrats. And they say, we know better, and this guy's coming in to shake stuff up. That's just not going to happen because he's wrong and we're right.
Yeah, right.
Now, doesn't matter whether they're wrong or they're right. That's not even the point because we get into that side debate. But if they are right, that's another debate.
Mm-hmm.
That's another debate. We can have that debate, and we have that debate all the time about whether we agree with the president on foreign policy or not. If I'm in the State Department, nobody cares what Gary thinks.
Right.
Nobody cares what Gary thinks as a talk show host. Donald Trump doesn't care what I think in the White House. He's going to go do what he believes is the right thing to do, whether I agree with him or not, or whether somebody in the State Department thinks one way or not. He'll listen to some advisors, I'm sure, like most presidents sometimes. But Trump especially went into office with his own mindset that this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like it at times. I might not like it at times. I may like it at times. It doesn't matter. He gets to make the call. He's president of the United States. He's the one in the with our separation of powers and our three branches of government gets to decide to do that. End of story. That's what I'm protecting.
Yep.
That's what I want to protect. I know that's what you want to protect.
Well, I mean, but the left takes it to the world is going to end.
Yes.
This guy has all the power, too much power. He's going to get us into war. I mean, you know, North Korea. You know, with before the summit, it was Little Rocket Man. Oh my gosh, he's going to kill us all. He's going because he tweets about North Korea. He's going to lead us to war. Then you go sit down. Then he goes to have a sit down with North Korea, And then, oh, that's ridiculous. You can't sit down with North Korea.
Right. Now he's sitting down with the dictator, and he's too friendly with the dictator.
The ultimate in diplomacy, and he still doesn't win.
Well, look, the people of this country, they put him into office because he was different. So he's different, and now different is impeachable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I see it. I think a lot of people who think like me, including tons of people who voted for him and are totally loyal supporters, tons of people who voted for him, but I like some of the stuff that he does, but those people over there are nuts when looking at the Democrats doing the whole pointing thing. And even there are people out there who didn't vote for him that were saying, okay, I really don't know. I don't know if the outsider that I believe actually look at it and go, I like him, but they understand the way the system runs.
Mm-hmm.
And the system is bigger than what I think or the State Department thinks on a particular issue. He's the president of the United States. He has certain authority given to him by the Constitution and certain powers that he alone has. They don't get to make the call. I know you want to protect the Constitution. I want to protect the Constitution. Millions of other Americans wish to protect the Constitution, and that's really what it gets down to.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's it. Because, again, if they can say this guy isn't fit, this is basically the case they're making. He's not fit or experienced enough to make foreign policy, to create foreign policy on his own, to determine what we're going to do with our allies and or enemies.
Well, you probably can say that over 50% of those that have led the State Department and have been presidents before have made the wrong calls.
Yes.
That have put this country into jeopardy at certain times in our history.
Yep, over and over again, we can demonstrate that.
Because he doesn't have a political history, doesn't give him any more power or any less power to do the same.
It's just, it is madness.
It is. If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
In the West this week,
still no sign of appreciable relief from autumn dryness.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says normally by this time in the autumn, the wet season for California and the West, we would have rains already started, but there's been very little rain at all. And so
a lot of California does remain unfavorably dry. If we were to see high winds return, certainly the wildfire threat could return as well. So we still need that wetting rain, something to tamp down the wildfire threat across California.
Where topsoils are rated short to very short of moisture, over 75% of the state, but the dryness is extending eastward into the high plains.
And that is what's affecting the wheat health in states like Kansas and southward into parts of Texas.
This week, at least 40% of topsoils in Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado are reported short to very short of moisture. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just very quickly, because we do want to cover it, because it's something we've talked about the last couple of days. Wall Street Journal had an article last night about the China deal and, the China trade deal. And we had been asking, they keep talking about the tariffs on our side, but what are the Chinese willing or not willing to do? And as we found out, they don't want to commit to $50 billion in agricultural products. They don't want to commit to strenuous enforcement procedures. And when it comes to forced technology transfers,
right,
they don't want to be too strict on that. So it's like, oh, everything.
Yeah, it's pretty much the agreement.
The agreement. So yeah. Don't know where we're going to go with that, but that's the latest from the Wall Street Journal. So.
Here is your forecast.
The storm system that brought snow across the interior Northeast and Great Lakes has departed, leaving in its wake record challenging cold, a gift from Canada. Winter-like air sits over much of the eastern United States. The intensity of the cold will ease during the second half of the week across the eastern half of the nation once the expansive high-pressure system moves off the New England coast. But in most places, temperatures will generally remain below average. Across the center of the country, a fast-moving clipper system has spread snow and some light freezing rain across portions of the plains and Midwest. A ridge of high pressure over California means continued dry and settled conditions across the state. Rain and snow chances will increase across the Pacific Northwest and the interior as an upper-level disturbance moves inland. Amounts are expected to be on the lighter side as the system quickly passes through the plains and into the Great Lakes region by Thursday. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Russian Assets, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Ready for this audio cut?
I don't know.
Our audio cut of the day. All right.
Okay.
From CNN's legal expert, Jeffrey Toobin. Here we go.
Because the one criticism of these two witnesses, which I think is very much legitimate, it's not really a criticism, it's just a factual statement, is that neither of them had direct contact with the president.
Ever.
Ever. And, yeah. And yeah, that's a problem if you're going to impeach the president.
Yeah, that's a problem. You know, you know, kind of have to have
first-hand knowledge of wrongdoing. They have second, third, and fourth-hand knowledge of no wrongdoing. Think about that. It's hearsay about nothing.
Yeah.
you know, it's well, everybody yesterday was focused on the hearsay, but it's hearsay about nothing. Well, nothing wrong was done.
And that's why I said by the Democrat standard of what guilt is, you have more on Hunter Biden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm saying that not because I'm accusing him myself of wrongdoing. By the Democrat standard,
right.
We use their standard. By the Democrat standard, Trump is guilty. Where's the evidence?
Right.
With the Bidens, well, we saw the proclamation from Joe Biden, right?
Yep.
We saw his proclamation.
Yep.
About how proud he was about what he did. He said that in the open. And we also know now, through the email chain that was released, and this is when the Democrats stopped saying it was a conspiracy theory.
Mm.
For the most part, stopped saying it was a conspiracy theory. Some will still say that it is, but I've seen the majority of them have either stopped it or just don't. Well, they just don't mention it anymore. They just don't bring it up. But as we know, John Solomon getting the emails that shows that the firm representing the Ukrainian gas company approached the State Department and wished to have a meeting with the State Department and in order for them to back off on their push, you know, to aggressively look at corruption in the Ukrainian gas company.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned that Hunter Biden was on the board of directors.
Right.
That's more evidence than they have of Donald Trump. And I think it was the Spectator that said, if you're going to be fair across the board, there should be cries to impeach, because you can post impeach,
mm-hmm.
to post impeach the vice president.
Right.
Where is that? Or at least invest. And as we said, right there gives credibility, because the whole point is that Trump, the only reason he did it, even though the evidence doesn't exist, that the only reason Trump must have done this is not because he wanted to ensure that corruption across the board didn't happen, But the only reason he did it was because he wanted to take Joe Biden out. That it was only personal political victory was the only reason that he did it. Well, that email chain killed that for Democrats. And as we said, if you wish to take that standard, that you cannot have any type of political advantage because that's the new form of bribery from Adam Schiff, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it doesn't matter. That it's not quid pro quo because the other guy doesn't have to know. Because this is a new one, that the other guy doesn't have to know. What you're trying to do is you're trying to get them to change, to change their policy.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is they don't know that you're going to have to keep the money from them, but you're trying to push them in order to get the direct benefit of being reelected as president of the United States.
Right.
Well, that falls apart because nobody was calling for, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, nobody called for President Obama when obviously his flexibility comment to the former Russian president that it will have more flexibility after the election was meant to say, I am going to behave in this way and not challenge you on this, or I can't promise you that I'm going to give you this yet because I need to get elected and the American people, because I'd be working against their best interest, might not elect me if they knew I was going to make this deal. Well, he was doing that strictly for what?
His own personal power gain
His own personal power gain.
And he made a promise.
Yep.
You got a much better case right there.
You have a much better case there. Look, for impeachment, since there doesn't have to be a specific crime anymore from Democrats, than Benghazi.
Oh, yeah.
His administration should be investigated. His administration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had talked about it many times. We believe he knew because, as we knew, the Joint Chiefs of Staff went to his office at night with the information and knew that he had the information and walked into that office.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for the next couple of weeks, that was a narrative. So we knew the White House knew.
Right.
We knew Hillary knew that night based on the email evidence that she knew that it wasn't a video or film, that it was a terrorist attack against Americans. He lied to the American people. She lied to the American people in order to set a narrative that terrorism was defeated so they can get reelected again.
Right.
Yeah, you've got more of it, and that's why we said by the Democrats' point of view of what evidence is in order to accuse guilt is much greater against the Obama administration and President Obama and the Bidens. There's more evidence by the Democrat standard than there is on Trump. There's nothing on Trump. There's no evidence on Trump.
Right.
There's not an email. There's not even a hearsay of a quid pro quo.
Right.
There's a hearsay that he wants. Yeah, there's hearsay that, well, yeah, we believe that he wanted the corruption investigations to go forward or they might not get it. But it wasn't, I want an investigation and I want a guilty verdict on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Otherwise, you don't get the money.
Mm-hmm.
None of that.
No.
You don't have I have more flexibility after the election. So I can't promise you this at this point. But I promise you after the election, after I get elected, even though I'll be working against the best interest of my own country, because I can't do this. Otherwise, I might not get elected.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans weren't calling for the impeachment.
No.
Of Obama at that point.
No, but if that's the new standard, then...
That's a new standard, right.
Then there you go. Well, and by the way, that goes for any sitting president in the future as they try to, behind, closed doors, create foreign policy. Which, by the way, they have the right to do. But if this is going to be the standard, then great. Fine.
But as you see, so much time is spent on what? The fact that they disagreed with the president on foreign policy.
That's all that is.
I don't care.
That's what we're going to see from Yovanovitch on Friday. What they'll do, though, is that I think the Democrats will focus on the part, which is what she said behind closed doors, the part of her testimony and that There were people, I think she said Ukrainian officials, telling her to watch her back around Trump. And apparently she got upset to the point she was shedding tears. So there's no doubt the Democrats will go after the drama. But it still does not rise to impeachment.
And I think we have to mention, I think we there's so many things going on. We hit it, but we can hit a little bit more detail. Kent's, George Kent's, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent's, who made the case for launching an investigation into the Bidens and their involvement with the, you know, the gas company.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they I'm reading here from the Federalist.com, and they got the PBS NewsHour tweet. George Kent, my concern was that there was the possibility of a perception of conflict of interest between Hunter Biden, the son of Vice President Joe Biden, was on the board of Burisma, the Ukrainian natural gas company. Hunter Biden served on the board of the company for $50,000 a month, despite having no prior experience in the energy industry, while his father served as the vice president and was the point person for U.S.-Ukrainian policy. Kent Altal testified in a private deposition that he voiced his discomfort over the situation to the White House in 2015, where the administration officials brushed off Kent's concern. I raised my concerns that I had heard that Hunter Biden was on the board of a company owned by something that the U.S. government had spent money trying to get tens of millions of dollars back and could create the perception of a conflict of interest, Kent told lawmakers behind closed doors in October. The message that I recall hearing back was that the vice president's son, Beau, was dying of cancer and there was no further bandwidth to deal with family-related issues at that time. So that was the end of the conversation. During his testimony before the House on Wednesday, Kent reiterated his conviction that officials in Ukraine ought to be investigated to root out corruption related to the natural gas company. To summarize, we thought the CEO of Burisma had stolen money. We thought a prosecutor had taken a bribe to shut that case. Are you in favor of that matter being fully investigated and prosecuted? Asked Minority House Intelligence Committee Counsel Steve Castor, quote, I think since U.S. taxpayer dollars were wasted, I would love to see the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office find who the corrupt prosecutor was who took that bribe and how much of it was paid.
Yep. And the follow-up question to that was, well, don't you think they should also go after the sponsors of the bribe, the people paying the bribe?
Right.
And you know, he kind of hem-hawed around that answer, but yes, the answer was yes. He gave the general answer that, well, anyone who broke the law in that case, yes, should be punished.
I can say again that our streak continues.
Yeah.
Whether it was every single day of Russia collusion, that every single day, you know, after about, you know, the 3 or 4 months of the allegations and then the start of the special counsel and everything else, and mm-hmm. everything started working against the Democrats. This has been a much more accelerated process. But I look at yesterday, and like I said, you know, Jeffrey Toobin sees it. They all saw it. They saw it on Meet the Press. The liberal panel saw it on Sunday. They don't have anything. They've got a difference in policy.
Right.
And you every single day that goes by looks worse for Democrats.
And it does. I mean, it's again, what happens on Friday, probably the drama surrounding the Yovanovitch. And again, if she brings it up, or they will bring it up in question, I'm sure, about the whole watch your back comment, which was part of the transcript that was released from her behind the closed doors testimony.
Well, what does that have to do with
nothing?
Hunter Biden.
Nothing. It is all about the difference in policy. You know, if the president, if she weren't doing the right job, if he didn't like the way she handled business for the U.S., president has the right to say, see ya.
Oh, yeah.
Take a walk.
Right.
And they were treating this story the other day when her testimony from behind closed doors came out as if it couldn't You know, it shouldn't be that way, or it's not that way. It goes right back to Sally Yates. Remember the whole Sally Yates thing?
Right.
She didn't want to leave. I mean, that whole thing to me still boggles my mind. What do you mean? You're being fired. You're being replaced. This is what happens.
Not by him.
I know.
You know.
He doesn't have the authority.
Right.
Well, yeah, he does. They just don't live in reality.
He wanted me to do his bidding, otherwise I was fired.
Right.
Well, yeah.
You that's what the job is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So we get a halftime in this, huh?
Yeah, we got a halftime here, and then Jovanovic
tomorrow.
And so on the Friday show, on tomorrow's show, we'll talk about where we think it may go with Jovanovic in the line of questioning, how the Democrats might position the Republicans to be the bullies during her testimony.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.